Away we go. Let's move on. Pardon me? Not very often.
Yeah.
I like yours, Jeff.
Is it fair for us?
No, I'm good. I'm not. I'm just tired. Just very tired. So we're going to proceed to school district and performance targets, which I think what we had the study group on, as I recall.
Exactly.
Boy, memories are
good. You're good. You all keep down in your memory.
That was clear back on Friday, wasn't it?
It was just a feels like a really long time ago.
I'm better today. So let's proceed with that. Who's going to run this?
Or? I'll start it, right. And then Marie and Joyce is here for whatever assessment questions come up.
Yeah, Joyce is getting caffeinated.
That
That's
I should
unfair.
Put that away.
It's not fair. Do you want something?
No.
Okay. So what our goals are for today, thank you again, all of you, for your time on Friday. It was so helpful to be able to go deep with you all, and I know that for a Friday afternoon that was really hard to do, but we really appreciated it. We were able to take your feedback and really think about it over the weekend, the last few days. So for today, I want to, again, go over your role in the process for target setting. Talk a little bit about two methods for setting targets, one that we talked about Friday, one that was shared on Friday as a possible method, and so we kind of played that out a little bit further this weekend. And then what we want to really do is think about if you all feel comfortable enough with a method to be able to say not to vote on it today. I think we can hold if you want to wait on voting and approving targets, but to feel comfortable enough that we would run those spring informational reports for districts, send them out, collect feedback, and then once we have the feedback, decide. I think what we just don't want to do is, if you're not sure enough on that method, is go down that path and give districts that information and say this is what we've done, knowing that you all have significant concerns. So I think if you have significant concerns, we'd rather wait, talk through some different options, and even if that holds up the spring reports a little bit, we want to just make sure you're comfortable enough before we put that out there.
Give us the nickel version of that approach.
The two approaches?
The preferred approach.
The preferred one. So there's two. There's one. Do you mind if we go through a few slides first and I get
sure.
to it?
No,
is that
right
okay? Okay. No, it's no problem at all. So those are our goals for today. Again, this is the statutory requirement that we shared on Friday about your role as a board. You can see the bold. The state board shall set, reaffirm, or revise as appropriate, ambitious yet attainable, statewide targets for the measures used to determine the levels of attainment of the performance indicators for the coming academic year. We went back and looked. The performance indicators really are defined as those main kind of categories in the frameworks of achievement and growth and post-secondary workforce readiness. The measures within those indicators are where we have the English language arts achievement data, the math achievement data, the science achievement data, the English language arts growth data. Those are those specific measures. So that's that kind of interpretation of the law and your responsibility. Also just wanted to highlight that the targets have the goal of raising the level of academic performance. That really actually aligns well with what's in Every Student Succeeds Act, with that kind of targets going forward. And that also state law says, to the extent possible, ensure that targets meet federal requirements too. So we've got a nice way, and I think it actually, I don't think we're sacrificing anything state-wise by aligning with federal targets. We pulled in the federal requirement language right here, just so you know, in terms of what those expectations are. Again, it's long-term goals with interim progress targets along the way is what that's asking for. And again, when we're talking about the specific targets, what we're looking for, what those measures of the performance indicators are those specific areas in that red circle around, and you know, in the past it was reading and writing. It'll be English language arts, math, and science for achievement, English language arts, math, and English language proficiency for growth, and then our PWR measures too. We're not talking today about the targets to determine the overall ratings. Those we'll talk about once we get through this step, then we'll get to that next step about thinking about how we want to set the cut points for the overall ratings, and we may want to do some different methodology for that. We talked on Friday a little bit about using criterion reference to really say, well, if a school is struggling in achievement and in growth and in PWR and in gaps, then maybe those schools that are identified that way should be turnaround. But that would be more criterion reference. So we could talk about doing it that way, or we can talk about doing it by percent of points or by the percent of schools we want to identify. There's a lot of options, but we'll get to that in the future. So So really, again, this is just another way to see where we need those specific targets set by. So academic achievement for English language arts, math and science, growth, post-secondary workforce readiness. So how we can determine the targets, we went into lots of detail on Friday. There's these two are the ones that are bolded that we want to talk about a little bit further today. The first one is using the school distribution and determining performance categories from that. So we norm, it's a normative measure, we norm the schools in the state, we set those cut points at the 15th percentile, the 50th percentile, the 85th percentile, and use those cut points at the, from the school for districts as well. Remember, we heard a lot of feedback from the field that they wanted those targets to be the same so they didn't get mixed messages. Just we have heard from some people that don't like that, a few people from larger districts. But overwhelmingly, when we went out around the state, when Ellie and I spent the fall in districts, when we've done surveys, people wanted a single set of targets. And then the other possibility is using is the idea that came up on Friday, thinking about instead of doing a target for each content area, you'd add them all up and then to make your determination later. I think when we dug in this weekend and really read the law and looked at those pieces, when the law says it needs to be targets on the measures themselves, not the performance indicators, I think that suggests that we need to have specific targets for English language arts achievement, math achievement, and those pieces. So that was our understanding of the law, but we'll walk through and talk about that option anyway. So Marie's going to talk through that option A a little bit about the school distributions, just as a refresher from Friday.
It is. Did we get an older version?
No, I should have. Are you looking at the accountability clock one?
I'm not looking at the wrong one. I'm sorry.
No, that's the right one.
Yeah, it doesn't.
What's the?
So, how do we determine these targets? There are just these three things. I don't have the option A.
It's on.
Yeah, I'm going to try
that's
to
find
a problem.
Yeah,
so
this is one.
Is this what we got Friday?
That's what I mean.
No, this is what I emailed to you last night and posted last night.
That's
so
why,
I didn't print
that's
it.
Why
well,
I didn't
print
that's
it.
Why I don't
have
it.
Yeah,
well, I provided
them
to you. Hard copy.
You did, I?
Is this it?
That should be it, yes. I'm not
okay.
Sure.
Thank you.
There it is.
Yes. Angela, do you want my paper copy?
There it is.
Let me try.
Okay.
I can do this.
It's on the board docs.
Which is this?
You know, I think you have the same one I have. Yeah, it's the old one, and I didn't get the.
It's the old.
Tell me the number again. We're on 17.
We are on 9, or 8, is the slide. Oh, sorry. And the action item, we are 17.01. And that's the one from Friday.
Show us option A.
Sorry.
Don't worry. No, I'm sorry.
Some of them are bad. It's looking at stuff on
there. It's a lot of
stuff. No, okay. That is oh,
there it is.
Yeah.
You should.
Oh, no. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry.
So I'll share with you this.
Oh, you're fine. So Marie's going to walk through that option A, the school norming, using the school distribution for the target.
So as we had discussed on Friday, this is the normative methodology for using the school distribution to assign ratings for the performance categories. So, you know, we've gotten feedback from stakeholders in our technical advisory panel that it would be appreciated to have a norm-based system. And sort of following what we have previously done, we have four rating categories of does not meet expectations, approaching expectations, meets expectations, and exceeds expectations. And they're set So that the approaching expectations is the 50th percentile, meeting state expectations is state average 50th percentile, and then exceeds expectations is at the 85th percentile. And just so you know, those approaching and exceeds expectations are approximately one standard deviation above and below the average. So there is, you know, a little bit of sort of statistical justification for having chosen those. And we have looked at baselining the targets. But because of the transition to Parkin, at least for the first few years, we'll want to look at how the percentile expectations change and sort of re-review those targets every single year with the intention of eventually sort of setting a set of baselines that we can make progress against in future years. So just to review sort of the where these targets will actually be set on the Park data, you can see that we have the scale score targets for English, language arts, mathematics, and in science, and we do split those up by elementary, middle school, and high school levels, just to sort of get a finer level of detail with those. And then option A, sort of what would that look like if we had built it into a performance framework? And we apologize, this is kind of a very rough, not so pretty look at that. But what you would see was that you'd see, you know, for achievement English language arts, we would report the mean scale score, the percentile ranking associated with that scale score, and then the rating that the district or school would receive based upon that mean scale score and the percentile ranking. And you can see here that we have, you know, each of the content areas has their own, you know, ratings reported. And then for growth, we also would be reporting the median growth percentile and then the rating associated for each of those categories. And then we had gone through and looked at what the impact data would be using this 1550-85 methodology on the school and district results. And so you can see that for the majority of the schools applying these ratings, we do get very close to that sort of ideal distribution at the end of 15% does not meet, 35% approaching, 35% meets, 15% exceeds. So we really do get a good distribution of scores. But the district results are not quite as ideal. There is a smaller proportion of districts that will be receiving exceeds ratings since we're using the school distribution. But the does not meet approaching and meets categories are pretty consistent. So that is kind of one of those unfortunate trade-offs that we found that every normative methodology has something that's not quite ideal about it, but in listening to the stakeholders and their desire for a single set of targets, the school distribution was sort of the best compromise that we could come to. And so then the pros for option A is that it directs attention to areas of performance that are exceptional or concerning. And this should help schools and districts inform their improvement planning processes. It helps people interpret the results, having sort of that easily identifiable red, you know, yellow, green, blue makes it easy for people to just be able to look quickly glance at the reports and get an idea of how their schools are performing. And it's also consistent with what we have done in the previous years of performance frameworks. And it meets the state statutory requirements for setting targets at the individual measure level, and also aligns with what we've seen in the Every Student Succeeds Act and sort of setting those targets and expectations and having them increase over time. So then the cons is that, you know, by categorizing that performance into four levels, we are losing some of the more detailed data that underlies, you know, the school and districts and sort of could be used to describe their performance. And then, as I said before, districts are not as likely to earn an exceeds or, to a lesser extent, a does not meets rating as the schools are just because they tend to be larger and cluster towards the middle. And then one more. So for some ideas for mitigation of some of those negative effects, we do have the request for reconsideration process, which allows schools and districts to submit additional data. If the school and district performance framework rating does not really reflect their actual level of performance, you know, they can come and make a case to CDE and to the state board that they should potentially have their rating revised. And the specific percentile ranks are considered in this review. So if there was a situation where you were only at the 83rd percentile and didn't quite make the 85th percentile, that would be taken into consideration.
Commissioner?
Mr. Murray, give me an example of some additional data that a district might, and how many did we have choose this process last year of reconsideration?
We had
So in general, we have K through three results on local assessments that have been submitted because that's not something that the state assessment covers. We also have had some districts with sort of 11th and 12th grade information potentially, and some other PWR and post-secondary success measures that they've presented. I do not know offhand how many requests to reconsiders we went through.
I feel like it was. I think there was like 35 or 40 schools that we had. We didn't do it this past fall because we had the accountability hold, but the fall previously, I think we had 35 to 40 schools in 12 districts, I think. About half the school, at least half, if not a little bit more than half of schools were approved. I think almost all of the districts were approved for their requests. So we've got a whole guidance document about what we consider and how we consider it and what data and all those pieces. So. Do you all have any other questions about that option and thinking through that going forward? Or?
Yes.
What would you say to those that might say a norm-referenced approach to this ensures that a certain number of schools are in the bottom 10% or whatever?
Absolutely.
And what would you? What would we say to school? I mean, it's like a zero-sum game, right, where you're going to move the mean up, and as you move it up, there's always going to be somebody in the lowest 10%, lowest quartile.
So I think
what would we say to that?
That's why we baselined with the previous targets in 2010. We kept those targets the same for 5 years. It was set on the norm, and then they didn't change over 5 years. And the difference that we have now is when those targets were set, we were well into a state assessment and had that, you know, more consistent data. So I think that's one thing. And then the other is those are targets for individual achievement. It's not for the overall distribution of, you know, turnaround and priority improvement. And I think that's something that's where we'll have to have the next stage in this conversation of how you all want to do that and how you want to decide what percent or what the cutoff is for turnaround versus priority improvement versus improvement. And that's a question where it really comes into identifying schools always at, you know, do you want to, in a way that every year you're going to renorm and always have 5% in the bottom, or you really want a way for schools to show and climb their way out of turnaround, which is what we've done.
Can I follow up? Can I have a follow up?
Yes, please.
When you look at the history of this initiative in terms of setting targets, am I right? The context is we want parents to know, we want to have transparency for the public, how well our schools doing when they click on school view, they want to know static outcomes, dynamic outcomes based on growth, so they can make good decisions for their students, for their kids. As we set these targets, what has happened? Haven't we been doing this for like over 10 years, setting targets, and schools would either meet them or not in some way?
So for the state system, it's been 5 years that we've been doing that. Clearly with AYP, we started that back in, 2003, in the fall of 2003. And I think you see a variety of things. What?
13
years.
Yeah,
it's a long time. It's
what's been the impact of setting these targets? I mean, the goal, I think, is to incentivize schools to reach for the target or exceed it. And the goal is to give great information to parents as we think about resetting them. What's the context for that work? What are we achieving by doing this? Do you have any window on that? I mean, have the targets helped? Have more people achieved them as we combine norm and criterion reference? Because I think that's what we've done in the past. Does it work? Are we getting something done as far as?
I think that we have seen schools making progress, and particularly sort of the schools that have been identified at turnaround to priority improvement and some of the things that they have done. We have seen improvement in their meeting targets, or they're going from sort of a does not meet rating to an approaching rating. I don't think that the performance frameworks inherently of themselves change the system. I think they're sort of the signaling device that we are supposed to then use for sort of improvement planning and for a whole additional layer of processes on top of that. And I think for the moment, the reason that we're trying to reset them or reset the targets right now is because of that transition in assessments. And so this is our opportunity with, you know, the new park assessments to decide if we do want to continue with sort of the system, a criterion referenced or a normative reference system, or the kind of this combination of these two things that we have previously created, and if we want to continue with that or if we want to make changes at this time.
Is there any data that's longitudinal that would show, for want of a better term, false positives and false negatives? And the idea is that we set it set a threshold. We want people to meet or exceed it, and then we hope it relates to something in the future. Kids or schools that don't achieve these thresholds, bad things happen. Their kids don't go to college. They don't graduate high school. Things happen. And yet I hear a lot of false positives and more false negatives, you know, in the system. And I don't think that's the exact right term, but I mean, in terms of the public's perception, it's like, what if the data doesn't really translate into stuff we care about? Being able to go to college, be successful, you know, that's more on a student level. But, you know, do you have any data like that would shed light on this work? What impact does it have on districts and students that go there?
Yeah, I think that's a big policy question that is important to answer. When we're in a system that's really saying that our state assessment is the indicator of school quality and where we want kids to go, I think it's a good policy question to answer. It's something we can dig in and see what's going
on. It's very time-consuming and very expensive to be doing.
Absolutely.
And I guess my question is, what impact is it having holistically? You know?
Yep.
Thanks.
Dr. Schroeder?
So what we don't know is what kids have learned, right? We know what kids have learned relative to one another. But we don't know that the top 15% of students actually meet all our standards academically. We don't know that, as Deborah pointed out, we don't know at the bottom 10 or 15% those kids don't meet standards or do. I mean, the fact that we're norming everything means that we're looking for an easy way to figure this out, but we're not telling our voters whether our kids are meeting standards or are not meeting standards. We only know how they're doing relative to one another. Am I wrong, Joyce?
I think you've got both in there. Do you want to take it?
I'll take the first part, and then I'll pass it off to you. So in terms of what do we know about individual students and their achievement of the standards, that does come through our individual student-level reporting, and that's not norm-based. That is criterion-based. That does allow you as a parent to know whether or not your child is meeting the standards based on that assessment on that day.
But as a taxpayer.
So then as we're thinking about some of these targets that are going to.
So I think as a taxpayer, you do get, because we're not just going to report the percentile rank, right? We're not going to just say you're at the 85th percentile. We're going to show them, and what we've been proposing is to look at the mean scale score, which is a little different than looking at percent proficient advanced. It tells a little bit of a different story. But the mean scale score can indicate to you where on average students are in the school. So right now, the exceeds rating where that 85th percentile came in is for English language arts is around 755. So 750, we know, is the cut on all the assessments for being at benchmark, being at that level 4 or 5 of students meeting those standards expectations.
On a criterion basis.
On a criterion basis, yes. So it's just taking those scale scores that are based on the criterion-based test and norming the results to say this is good enough. Because I mean, what you could also do, and Joyce and I were talking about this, is you could put 750 as your meets cut point. Right, that's what we want the mean scale score to be at all kids, like on average the school's at level 4 or 5 and higher. That would be a criterion reference you could do. If you did that, most of our schools are going to be below meets. They're going to be getting approaching or does not meet ratings. But that's something we could do, but that would be using a criterion approach. And that would tell you a little bit more based on where kids actually were with standards. It would lead to different outcomes for what we're seeing.
I know, and that's what scares everybody, which is why we don't have the courage to do this. Nevertheless, is there some way to either supplement? Mm-hmm. I mean, we get the reality check from NAEP that says, yeah, you're not where you think you are. And I don't know that we want to keep doing that. I think we want to be able to tell our taxpayers, based on a norm system where we compare the kids to each other, this is where we are.
Absolutely.
But comparing that to a criterion, mm-hmm. we still have ways to... I mean, there ought to be some kind of communication
Absolutely.
That is more meaningful than just norming, despite the fact that we all grew up with norming. And we so-called understand it. I don't know that we do, but we're closer than that, certainly, than we are in criterion reference.
And I think we can help provide that context by making sure that those mean scale scores and what they translate to in terms of their understanding of the standards and mastery of the standards is right there on the frameworks, too. So you can see you might have earned an exceeds rating at the, you know, and be at the scale score of 755, but that means on average, your kids are just meeting that benchmark. Doesn't mean you're exceeding. It doesn't. So we can put those two pieces of information together. I think it's really, and that's, it's a really important conversation for you all to think about. Do you want to send a message? And you could go either. There's pros and cons to both. Do you want to send a message that all our schools are struggling or and, does not meet and approaching because they're not yet. We're not yet to that level of all kids at 4 and 5, or on average, all kids at 4 and 5. Or do you want to kind of norm it out and then work your way up and ratchet those targets up over time so we get there? So there's different options for it. That's why I wanted to talk to you all about what you wanted.
Dr. Shuffle.
Yeah, so I guess I need to be able to understand deeply how the norm reference and criterion reference models are both implicit in these proposals, because I think they're both in there. And I think that we're used to norm reference tests being used for informational purposes, not for high stakes purposes. Yeah. We'll use norm reference tests for high stakes. There's a bit of a disconnect because you're forcing people into those lower quartiles, and it's problematic. It's like a no-win situation, which is why we're infusing criterion reference
inside.
And we
know who we're putting down there, too.
Yeah. So I think that this discussion is a good initial discussion. Mm-hmm. I have, like, a lot of questions to figure out what's in these numbers and how we're combining norm and criterion reference to create these charts. So thank you.
So I think I would just say that and you correct me here if I'm wrong, that the mean scale scores, that's really criterion-based because that's coming from the state assessment. That's based on the standards, right? And then our judgment of them, how we apply a rating to it.
How we apply to a rating to the school's mean scale score.
Yeah.
So it's the individual student assessment results are criterion referenced. We roll that up to the school and district level, and then that is what we set the sort of a normed distribution on. So we identify the schools or the districts that are below the state average or above the state average. And then that's for individual ELA content areas. And then we roll all of those different performance measures together to give a final rating, a final score that describes all the schools in the state, and then that is usually where we have put sort of the criterion referenced, or that's our suggestion, is to put sort of the criterion referenced at that top level to decide which schools are identified as turnaround, which schools are identified as priority improvement, and all those pieces. Because at the individual performance measure level, doing criteria referenced would just be an enormous amount of time and energy and effort and a lot of resources to do. And so generally the place you get the best bang for your buck for sort of doing the criterion reference piece is at that final end rating level.
So this would be helpful. I mean, I'm sure you hear from schools and districts as I do. The ones that do well in the system feel good about it. Yeah. The ones that don't do well complain about fairness issues. Mm-hmm. It would be helpful as we think about how we want to set these is let's look at some examples in the schools that have had the most criticism of the system. And why do they criticize it in terms of fairness? Are they saying that there's no standard error of measure as far as where the bright line is drawn, and they could have, in a small district with a small N, 3 students might make the difference in what bucket they end up in? Is that one criticism, and how does this approach either address that or not address it? Mm-hmm. I think we need examples for the districts that have had the most problems with the current system, because I think this is kind of like what we've been doing.
Well, actually, I think we need examples for the districts that say they're high flyers and, in fact, on a criterion basis may or may not be. Because we don't know the top percent. I mean, for a long time, the top 15% weren't really necessarily that high performing had they been given a different assessment, right? The assessment sort of determined where they were going to be, and in fact, there was a lot of room for growth that wasn't going on.
Dr. Flores,
and I'd like to bring this discussion into the level of those kids that are hard to serve and that do not do well. I know that in Denver Public Schools, for instance, we have these hard to serve schools that have 42 students in a classroom. And I'm not talking about high school. I'm talking about elementary school. How is it possible that we don't know why a classroom like that is not performing? I mean, we know that, look at Jefferson County says 22. Am I correct? 22 students for in elementary school? I think it's 22. I've been looking, and this is something that I have taken. You know, I'm with a group of people that looked at Denver Public Schools and looked at poor kids and looked at why they're not achieving. And when we looked deep into and went into classrooms, we saw these numbers. I know that I and another person met with board members. We asked these questions. Well, it's, and then there's the excuses. Well, it's just hard. It's just hard. You know, we just don't have the money. We just don't da-da-da-da-da-da. But we know that if we have lower pupil-teacher ratios, those kids are going to do better. And we want those kids to do better. And here we are talking about, I know, but I have to bring it down to kind of a level that we know why kids are doing well or not doing well. And also, I think we need to look and have showcase. Like, for instance, this superintendent that was here today, one of the conditions should be your school is doing well. Let us showcase why your district is doing well. How is your district? What other districts are like your district? And what is different? I think we need to start kind of thinking that way of solving the problems for these students that really do need the help. I mean, I know I go on about giving awards to these school districts and these schools that are doing well and showcasing those schools. But we also need to showcase schools that are have conditions, are serving hard students, and how did they get to approaching, and then how did they get to meets? And I think we do need to profile, and we do need to show those, because, you know, it just is very concerning. And I come from a district that has a large population of free and reduced lunch kids, and we know what works.
Dr. Shuffle.
Yeah, and I think you're implicitly asking what's in the number, right? And we know that these assessments load so heavily on language, listening, speaking, reading, and writing. And these tests are all given in English. And so if kids struggle with language, their scores are not going to look great. And the density of the questions, certainly in the PARC tests, makes it very difficult for kids who struggle with language to get good scores here. So I think your question implicitly is, how do we interpret these numbers? Well, what are the factors that predict those numbers? And language is a huge predictor. So I think it's a great point.
So we want to keep moving, if that's okay with you all, and
yes,
talk
please.
About this other option. We just wanted to kind of think it through a little bit more after the conversation on Friday. So I think the idea really was that each content area and indicator would just be measured by their raw percentile rank. You wouldn't roll it up to a bucket of does not meet, meet approaching, meets or exceeds. And then you could kind of sum up those percentile ranks at the end and look at it that way. As we dug into what state statute said, I think you all really do need to set targets at those individual levels, and we can't not set those targets there. But we just wanted to draw it. We made a little few pictures on what it could look like and thought through the pros and cons anyway. So it would be like this. Instead of having a rating for the individuals, you'd wait, and you'd have some kind of weighted average of the percentile sum, and you'd give a rating there, be it meets or whatever. So the pros of doing that, you'd get more of that detailed, nuanced data included in. And it would still inform improvement planning because you'd have the data there. But we thought that there definitely were some cons to it. In terms of we know, unfortunately, it's really hard for people to kind of understand, get wrap their heads around data. It's not always an intuitive thing for people. So this really would require digging in and knowing what percentile ranks mean and understanding that. Additionally, it may hide specific content areas, because if you're looking at that overall sum, if you're really doing great with English language arts and struggling in math, but it comes out on average at meets, you won't necessarily see that unless you really dig in. may provide less actionable information. It's a change from current practice. You might be able to work it through with every student succeeds act, but we're not sure. And we also thought it wasn't totally aligned with state law. We thought through some mitigation pieces to it. We could color code the percentiles to try and give some kind of indication. People, I know there's some people out there that can't see color, but for those that can, they really, that color coding is a really helpful signal. So we can do that. We can do a lot of training to help people understand the data to a deeper level, and we could prioritize that use of resource with change, with providing support to the field. So where we are with next steps, and you all let us know how you feel. But before we put out any targets in a spring report, an informational report to districts, we'd like to know that you all feel that that's enough down a path that you feel comfortable with and want to collect feedback on. But if you're not sure enough about that path, we want to wait and make sure we get there, because we don't want to give data to districts and say, well, the state board isn't really sure, but we're going to give it to you anyway, and it may all change. It may change anyway based on the feedback. I think we're going to be flexible for that, but we want to make sure you all are comfortable enough before going forward. So if you all want us to dig into other options and bring examples first, whatever it is you'd like, just let us know that. But once we get that kind of level of comfort from you, then we can make those informational reports, get those out to the field, and collect feedback on them. That's our plan for spring, early summer, so that we can make any last refinements before the frameworks go out next fall. We'll make sure we share all the feedback we get from the field with you. But then you'll also need to vote on targets before the August meeting so that we can actually get those frameworks out as required by statute and meet in time. And then we'll revisit them like we talked about Friday. When we have another year of testing data, we will revisit those targets and see how similar or different they are if we go with the distribution, with the norm distribution. So we'll go look and see if those are things that we want to hold or if we need to readjust after the second year of assessment.
Dr. Schroeder?
So this is March, mm-hmm. and you want us to make some decision by June.
If you're not going to meet in July, or you don't want to hold
a
special meeting,
we're not going to meet in July if we can possibly avoid it. Right?
Sounds like flies off the table.
Yes.
It may just be my limitation, but I would love some examples.
Okay.
And examples of very different kinds of districts, numbers, input factors, as has been mentioned by several members, and what does it end up looking like? Because I don't process it well unless I can see. And if we've learned anything, I think we've learned that these decisions that we make have a very different impact depending Absolutely. On the nature of this school district or school, the size of the school mm-hmm. district, and a whole lot of other factors. And if you guys can, I mean, go ahead
Give
and look at real districts, but don't present
yeah,
us
absolutely.
With real districts.
We'll give you some profiles.
Present us with a set of assumptions and then what it would look like. Because I think that would sure help me
absolutely.
To figure out, well, what's... And then, I don't know, I still want to be able to think about how I explain to taxpayers the way we've put this together, the way this is a quasi-criterion reference process. And I want to be able to say that there are always going to be these districts on the bottom. Even if all kids are successful, there are going to be these districts. And I'm very...
If we get all our kids successful, we don't need to have turnaround. If we could get everybody there. Unfortunately, we're just a long way from
Well,
that
our growth model our has right always was normed, and so there had to be half the districts below, half the districts above.
The student results in the growth model are normed, but the schools are not normed or the districts aren't normed. You could, in theory, have every single school and district in the state at 50 out of mean growth percentile of 50. It doesn't happen because we see different results in different schools, but the math could work that way. It's not set.
Okay. Then we need to be able to explain that.
Yep.
Because that's not the perception out there.
We
the perception out there is that we have this rigged.
Okay.
And if color
Well, if you
helps.
Use norm, if you're norm, you're theoretically rigging it for the tail on the left, right? Right,
either
left.
Tail.
Right.
Yeah. Both tails.
And if you
and on the right, you don't actually know that the kids are
we know
performing
better.
Well.
We know better now because we have a test that better measures
right.
the
right.
Right.
And in the colors, I mean, you have distinct colors. And it could, I'm just thinking that it could help if you had hues of color. You know, like hues of yellow.
Purple.
Hues of,
I want purple. I'm a Rockies fan.
Exactly. You could have hues. And people would understand that. So that, you know, it's not so cut and dry. I'm really seriously, 84 and 85, and then you just have that cut right there. It's
so it's everything from mellow yellow to canary yellow. Okay? All right.
Oh, good.
Yellow. I learned his colors.
Mellow yellow. Heck of a deal.
So would you all like us to come back and... Where we are, we're in March now, in April, with some examples, some kind of different profiles using the school distribution method, and maybe, do you want to see something else? Do you want to see, like, if we used criteria and used the
yeah, you sure.
The park, like, if we used the park cut scores for, like, the level five for exceeds, whatever that mean scale would be, and four for meets, and I don't know, we'll figure out how to do it.
I don't
it.
Want you we'll to knock something. Yourselves out to the point where it's irrelevant.
Okay. I'm just wondering if you want to see more than one way of doing it.
If you could, I'd love it, because I'm a little worried about what will be the response to what we're doing.
Okay.
And we do believe in a competency-based system that by definition has to be about identifying those competencies and being somewhat criterion reference. And I recognize that we're going to, it's a push, but to the extent that we can be pushing, to the extent that if we're one of the magnificent seven, we can be pushing, that has merit, even though we know that we'll have to bring our parents and our population along with us to this other way of looking at things. Because there will always be people that I know who will want to know the norm, norm distribution.
That's correct.
Both pieces of information are very valuable. And I just also want to... There's two other policy points that we're going to have to talk about that are going to have an impact on all this as well. Thinking about the weighting of how much achievement versus growth versus post-secondary workforce readiness is weighted in the frameworks, that's going to have an impact, because the concerns about the norm reference really have to do with the achievement. That's where you see the biggest impact. So depending on how much you all weigh achievement, that will impact the overall ratings or how we are there. So that's a big piece of it. And then that overall rating, how we determine who's turnaround overall, that's going to be another big...
What's our feedback from the districts in terms of how much we've been emphasizing growth versus achievement level?
I get most people like growth, but I also get growth should be the only thing that is counted, and we shouldn't look at achievement at all. And I also get, we should only look at achievement, and growth doesn't mean anything, because all my kids are proficient, so it doesn't matter that they're not growing at all. So we hear everything.
Oh, boy, I have a hard time with that guy. Just because you're proficient doesn't mean that your kids shouldn't be churning.
Yes, but we hear that.
We hear that
from people that if we're proficient, then you should just leave us alone.
I can guess where that comes from, too. Been there.
Oh, no, it might surprise you.
Dr. Shuffle.
And from a policy perspective, since we've been doing this for 13 years, it would be helpful to know how much money it costs to set these up and the database that's created as a consequence, and managing the system and giving feedback and collecting documents. It's very expensive, I would imagine. And what have we got out of it from doing it for 13 years? I mean, conceptually, we've generated data. Has it resulted in districts doing more? Or I don't know. I imagine parents know more, perhaps, if they go into School View. I don't know what the hit rates are on that website.
We can do that.
But that would be interesting to know.
It's huge.
Any other comments or questions? So do you have what you need to proceed, or do you need more definitive answers from the board?
Do you feel okay? I feel okay. I feel like we got some ideas. Maybe we'll run them by you, Dr. Schroeder, before the next meeting. Make sure we're on the right track, and we can bring back some examples first.
So you think you have what you need?
I think so.
But we are going to get to a point where the board's going to have to make a decision and live with it.
Yeah.
So it's probably, not later than May, but more likely April next meeting?
I if we want to be able to get spring reports out, then next meeting we need to have a sense from you all that, yes, go this way and get those reports out doing it this way.
And those spring reports will be based on what
It's just based on 2015, so it's not right. comprehensive, all that data, but we just want to give them like a
2015
sense.
2015 PARC test?
Yeah, 2015 PARC. And CMAS science, not social studies. English language proficiency on access, ACT, dropout, grad rate.
So you're gonna marry all that data.
We'll put it all together.
Come in and give,
yeah, because we know.
Give a district or a school report. Yeah. For each
school and district. We know that it's hard to really give feedback on how the frameworks look or work until you see your own data in there. Once they see their own data, then you get a whole other kind of level of feedback.
Right.
So that's why we felt it was really important to give them something, even though it's older data, just to get a sense. And we're not planning on giving them any kind of overall rating because we're not there with you all yet. We just want to...
Dr. Flores, then.
Basically asking all of us, is it possible to have another cheat session like we did before? Right before the, as we did, you know, last Friday.
I would say let's get some examples to see what our level of comfort is.
Mm-hmm.
And then you might be right. It might be best to dig a little deeper into how was this created?
Right.
What was the impetus?
Before
right.
April.
Yeah. Right now, until I kind of see what this is going to look like, I'm a little vague on what my questions are. I want to be able to know what are my questions at this point.
Yeah. Would you all rather do that, looking at those examples, in more of a study session? A few days, a little bit before the board meeting. And if you're flexible with us on deadlines for materials, we could squish that in.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm asking.
And do that, we can kind of...
Some of us are going to be gone the week before.
Okay. Oh, I'm going to be gone the week before.
I'm going to be.
I can't do that for you either, as I'm offering that.
Yeah, that's going to put a lot of pressure on you.
Yeah.
Because of the NASB stuff. I think the timing might be... Wicked.
We could maybe make it as a study session depending on how many items we receive during the April board meeting, block out. You all will be recessing on Thursday at 11
for lunch.
The PBC luncheon, so maybe that Thursday morning we could dedicate 2 hours or so to this item and treat it as a study session during the board meeting.
That's a good idea.
Okay, let's see what we can do.
Okay.
We'll do our best. Yes, so.
You might have already said this, but what is the current weight of growth versus achievement? Is that a hard metric to surface?
No. So at the elementary and middle level, it's 75%. That's growth and growth gaps the way it's in. The way growth has been in the frameworks, it's had that adequate growth component in it. So that has some relationship to achievement, so it's not pure growth. Some districts, a lot of people would say it's not pure growth. So the way we're thinking going forward is that especially because this first year we don't want to do adequate growth quite yet until we have a little bit more consistency with the assessment.
Did you say 75%?
75% for elementary and middle. For high school, it's 50, right? 35.
So that's going to be based 35. On. So you're going to tell the public District A,
50,
which performs in the bottom quartile, but had significant improvement, is a better place to send your child than District B, which is in the fifth percentile but had little improvement. Is that what you just told me?
It depends on how the numbers work out, but it could be that we have decided as a priority.
Count me as a no vote on that, okay?
So, well, that's where you all need to revisit that and think about.
Okay, so 75%.
No, it wasn't just growth. It was growth plus adequate, which is a whole different conversation.
So it's growth is 75% middle elementary and 50 high school?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And statute says growth and post-secondary workforce readiness have to be weighed the most. It doesn't say how much, but those two have to have the most weight.
Who says that? I'm sorry.
State statute says that. That was written in.
It says they have to have the most.
The most weight.
So it could be... You could scale that back far below 75.
Okay. Yeah.
I think you just want to make sure that you're emphasizing that it's growth and post-secondary.
Yeah.
So your post-secondary measures are not growth measures, right? Your post-secondary measures are going to be like your ACT scores and
dropout
and graduation rate.
And the matriculation rate moving forward.
So
Yes.
So when we talk again, could you break out the algorithm in detail? What feeds into these distinctions, labels, and numbers? So what are the weightings? So when you say it's growth, but it's more than growth, if you could be very detailed, that would be helpful. Because, again, it's like what's in the category, what comprises it, and what are the weightings? That algorithm is crucial to understand.
Would you like us to go through how it's been in the past or what the proposal is for going forward?
Well, it's been in the past, because then we can look at how that's affected where districts stand, and then we can think about it, I think, more helpfully.
Okay. Further discussion? Any questions?
If you all come up with questions after this and would like information, please just reach out to us. It'll help us if you come to us sooner than later.
Very good. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.